You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. We're at season 13, episode 34. I'm John, and tonight joined by regulars Josh and Robbie. How are you doing?
Very well, John. Good to be back on the show and looking forward to hearing all about tonight's guest.
Glad to be on tonight, John, with an open goal superstar. hot off the press, man. Two shows in 1 week, Robbie's been on.
I know. Hot off the press of hanging about with stars like Andy Halliday, my favourite.
Yeah, you done well, mate. You done well on the Open Goal Fans Forum.
Thank you very much, John.
Held your own against the rest of the boys, and it was a shame that there was nobody there from Ross County on that panel, because I would have liked to hear a bit of perspective about Derek Adams, given his latest interview at the weekend.
I don't think they could source anyone.
Ross is on there a week chatting a wee bit about him.
He's something else, isn't he?
Aye. So we've got a first guest special of 2024. Also as well, worked out that it's our first European player to play in Scotland on the podcast as well. So, Christian Nadi, how are you doing?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. When we were saying we were getting you on, I did a wee bit of research. I spoke to some fans or clubs that you played for, some folk as well that you've been involved with in the game, and everyone says what a gentleman you are, so everyone had very kind words to say about you.
There's a lot of flyers.
We thought we'll buy you. We'll get you.
You didn't speak to any Hibs fans, did you, John?
No Hibs fans. What was it? A record we were checking earlier. I was talking to a boy, Ethan, that's a Dundee fan. He's spoken to you before. You scored 6 times against Hibs, and every time you scored against them, you were never in a losing team.
Yeah, I know. It's quite weird. You know, I scored most of my good in Scotland against Ibs, so it's not bad.
First of all, thanks for coming on. We're going to talk obviously a bit about your career in terms of like as a player, and more recently you've obviously been in coaching, so we're interested to see how that transition has been and maybe any advice you might have for aspiring coaches as well. So going back, we're going to go back to obviously you were born in France. What was it like growing up in France, culturally, from a football point of view, in terms of how it differs to football culture here?
Green in France is totally different than here. It's totally different here. Obviously, it's good and it's bad, but it was good. It was good. What I see is different is about the academy, you know? So where's the structure of the academy in France is totally different than here. And that's why maybe you've got more French players and Scottish players. I don't think it's about the size of the country, but the way the structure is made is unbelievable.
Is that due to like the fact that the French brought in a policy whereby so many French players had to be involved in squads?
Excuse me?
I remember around the time about that France won the World Cup prior to that, there'd been a kind of policy brought in whereby more French players had to be involved in the squads.
No, the way the thing are set up in France is like every single village in France got a team. It's got a club from under 6 to the senior. So every single village and every single town, every city's got a club. So when you've got a city, you've got a few clubs, obviously. So imagine how many players there is in a full country. Because there's, like I say, there's towns, there's countries, cities, there's villages, and you never stop playing. And I've been raised in this environment where you don't stop, you never stop playing. As soon as you put your boots on at 5 years old, you've got games every weekend.
How often Christian, would you play? Sorry, on your Robbie.
Christian, just on that, from the age of 5 years old, always wanting to play football, Was it anyone in particular, anything in particular that inspired you, like as a kid, to pick up that boots and play football in the first place?
Well, I had my big brother. We used to play football. He was amazing. He was so fast. Then my dad was a coach as well. So I was born into it, you know. And then my dad used to watch the video cassette of Pelé. It's weird to talk about video cassette.
Billy.
Yeah, so we've been watching that every day. You know, when you're a kid and you watch the same thing all the time. That's what I've been watching, and there's a cartoon used to call I don't know if you know, it's called Captain Tsubasa. Captain Tsubasa. It's about football. That's every day. Every day.
Excellent. Christian, your first I think your first professional club was Troyes. Is that right? Yeah. So what age did you go into Troyes? What was your were they because you were born in Paris, weren't you? Yeah. What was your who did you support growing up?
I was supporting Marseille, which
Oh,
is where I
Marseille.
started from. Yeah, I was supporting Marseille, but
Glory Hunter.
yeah, it's not the right place to, it's not the best place to support Marseille. But in France, it's different, right? So I left my family when I was 15 to go to academy. So, for example, would you imagine living in Glasgow and playing for Ross County? So you don't travel all the time, so you stay there. So you go to school there, you sleep there, you do everything there, and you come back only for the summer holiday and Christmas. So you come back home 2 times a year. You live in a complex where there's only your teammates, or only the, for example, I was under 17 at the time, under 16. There's only under 13, under 15, under 17. We live together. We all live together. Obviously we've got a room. We've got individual room, but we go eat together. We live together. We do everything together. We've got a classroom where it's only the players in the room. So we are in a small world where the football pitch is just outside the building, and that's why there's so many football players there. But there's few only who manage to make it.
And then at Troy, you managed to make your debut at the age of 16. So what was that like making your debut at such a young age?
Honestly, thank you for that. But I was 17.
17. All right, okay.
Was
I'm plugged
17.
out. I've done the maths
I was
on.
17. It was, you know what? My first game, it was so weird, because I was, so you see, France is quite big, and there's a small island, Corsica. And the first game, I've been after training with them for a week, with the first team for a week, the coach put me in the team to play the first team, and we took the plane to go there. The plane to go there. We arrived there. And I remember we arrived, we were two young players in the team that day. And when the police officer came to us and said, he was very, very like, see, he could see the testosterone coming out of his ears and his nose and everything. And he said, are you okay, guys? And we are too young. We are, yes. Are you playing today? He said, oh, we hope. We are so excited. He said, you're not winning today. And we were laughing, so we were joking. The guy wasn't joking at all. He was really, really serious. And he said, if you win today, you're not going home. And that's what happened in Corsica. For years, they've not beaten at home. They could lose everywhere, but at home, never lost. And that was my first impression of professional football. Police rating me.
So obviously, kind of played there for a few years, and also as well from a young age involved with the France under 21 setup. So how does that go about in terms of getting the call for the international setup? What happened?
To be honest, it didn't go as planned, because I've been called up by the French national team under 21, and I've been called up by the Ivorian national team, first team. Because my parents are from Ivory Coast and I've got double nationality. So I wanted to go with Ivory Coast. That was my dream. And my club at the time told me Zana to pick France because no player from the club been called up for a French national team at any level, and that would bring money to the club. And they told me that if I wasn't going there, they wouldn't sign me. They wouldn't give me a professional contract. So I had to go there. I ended up being in the under 21 national team with players like Patrice Evra and other with no professional contract. So they were all professional, earning I don't know how much money, and I wasn't even professional playing for the French national team.
Christian, how do you deal with the pressure? Like, there's a lot of talk about young players these days getting the moves very young or getting breaks into national teams at a young age. Did you feel the pressure when you was getting called up to France under 21s?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You feel it. You feel it, especially when you play for France, where you've got so much people are expecting something from you. People are expecting something from me at the time. They were looking at, they were watching me, like everything I was doing. like in how was we eating, if I was involving in the team or staying in the corner, if I was speaking with the players, how I was in training, if I was shy, if I wasn't shy. All those small details, they're watching everything you do when you're tired, when you're not tired, when you feel great at the warm-up, every single thing you do, they're looking. It's another world.
Because obviously, you played quite a lot of games at quite a lot at quite a young age, didn't you? You played quite a lot for Troyes in League Two when you were what age were you? Maybe about 18, 19?
So I played 17, I played in Ligue 1, and then we went down. I played the last five games, we went down, and then we went back up. So yeah, 18, 19, yeah.
And is that, I mean, do you feel that that's healthy for a young player? Is it good for a young player to get so many games so young? Or is it better, I mean, is it better to kind of gradually phase in players?
That's actually a very interesting question. Now it's different if you talk about the physical aspect. I would say it's really good to play at the time. It gets older, gets used to it. You know, your body even grow up really quick. You don't have the choice. You know, the contact and everything. Now, is it, if it's good mentally, I don't think so. I don't think so because especially if you don't have the right person around you, it's the worst thing that can happen to you.
Did you get much support at that age, like from like the associations in terms of like dealing with like pressure or starting your football career so early, or was it just a case of on you go, get on with it?
No, you. I think as soon as you become professional, you become a product. As soon as you become professional, you become a product, and you be treating like a product. You know, so you know that people around you are fake because you know you need to make your product look good. You need to love your product. You need to pretend actually you love your product. So it's quite difficult. I'm not gonna lie. The love of football that I had from the outside world, it was amazing, but when you get inside world, you see how dirty it is. And how people react to you, how people speak to you. And if you don't know that, it's quite difficult. Like I say, if you don't have a good entourage, it's really difficult.
And then I
And
suppose that.
at the time, you didn't have any help. You didn't have, you didn't know who you could talk to. And you know, when your parents, when you reach your goal and your parents are proud of you and so happy for you and excited and all the family, it's hard for you to tell them. It's difficult. It's when they ask you, "Are you okay?" I'm fine. But when you know what's happening, you see, it's disgusting.
It must be.
Without trying to make people hate football or something, but there's a world and you can't see. You know, it's but in France, here it's different.
No, but it's a serious issue. You know, it's a very serious issue, and it's really, I think it's really important that pros and ex-pros talk about their experiences from a young age. Because I mean, how do we prevent that kind of pressure put on young kids at such a young age in future, you know? And as you say, some kids will take to it, but then some won't. And you know, potentially, I mean, when I think about how many players, how many top players we might have missed because they weren't given the correct support at a young age, it worries me, you know.
Honestly, I've been lucky to play around the world, right? And after France, the place where I see the most wasting talent is here. It's here. I see they're so talented. Honestly, it's unbelievable, and they've got the heart and everything, but they're not looked after properly.
In what way would you say they're not looked after properly? Is that in terms of like advice of what it is to be a professional footballer,
Oh,
or?
it's about everything. It's about everything. You know, for example, I mean, I play for Trossard, get into the academy, right? All I see around me is football players who want to make it. I need to adjust to this. I need to have the same wheels that they want. They have. I need to work as hard as they do if I want to reach my dream, because you've got 100 players, right? Only two is going to make it. And everybody thinks they are going to be the two players going to make it. So you need to work as hard as the next guy. And all you do is football. So you wake up, I'm just going to give you like what we do. We wake up at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, you go to school, finish at 10, half past 10, you're on the football pitch, finish at 12, you go for your lunch, 3 o'clock, half past one, half past one. You're at school, half past three, you finish 4 o'clock, you're in the football, 4 o'clock, you're on the training pitch, you finish at six. That's every day. You don't have time for extra stuff.
Right.
So in Scotland, for example, you go to school with everybody. You've got your friend you grew up with. You've got the friend you grew up with. Then you start to hit 15. And you start to know the life, you start to know the drinks, and you not start to the alcohol, you start to know the girls. So a player who focus on what he's doing will be like, no, I'm not coming out on Friday night with you guys to this birthday party. I'm going to run Saturday morning because I've got my dream and I need to reach it. So I'm gonna work as hard as I can. Next week, no guys, I've got running at 6 o'clock in the morning. I need to reach my dream. I need to work as hard as I can to get my dream. That lasts for 7 weeks, the 8 weeks. Oh, you know what? I'm gonna come just for half an hour. Boom, you lost your dream. That's it. Because you're gonna start to know the other life, where you party, where you see the girls, where you start to drink and everything. And the week after, because you already tasted that, you already need taste sweets. You've got the choice between going out with your friend and having fun, or wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You already tasted what is good. You're not going to go back at 6 o'clock in the morning. Trust me. You stay with your friend. And that's the beginning of. That's
Yeah,
it.
it must be lonely at that age though, because when you're a youngster and everyone around you is doing that, it takes a lot of sacrifices. Like for you to get where you did, you must have had to sacrifice a lot throughout your career.
No, well, I've been to school and I talk about this, about my career and everything, and I start by the same question, and I say, why do you think players get paid so much, and everything, and the whole answer is because of sponsors, because there's so many people watching the game, because they sell shirt and everything, and I tell them my story, and then at the end I ask the same question, and the answer is all sacrifices. What are you ready to lose to reach your dream? What are you ready to do to reach your dream? What are you ready to sacrifice to reach your dream? And there's so many people who don't have the not strong enough, because you need to be strong to say no every single week, every single day about something who tastes. So, you know, my dad used to tell me, he's still here, but he used to tell me, what tastes good on your tongue is bad for your body. And what's good for your body don't really taste good on your tongue. So as long as you don't taste the nightlife, the party, and you still focus on your dream, you're fine. But as soon as you start to taste it, difficult to stop it.
Did you ever get anyone in the academy in France, then they would try and sneak out to try and enjoy themselves, or was that no chance of that happening?
The people that I know, everybody who tried to sneak out never made it. That's a fact. I'm sure some done it. That's probably some done it, but it's very difficult. And usually, when you do it, because what happened is, would you imagine you play for Air, right? Let's say you play for Air United. Air United know everybody in the town. So as soon as you go out, they know you've been out.
You can't let me spot it.
Yeah.
No hiding places.
Just on that, Christian, I was just interested to know. I mean, the boys, the guys there were asking about, when you were in academy and when you were, coming through at Troy. Was there anyone else in your age group that you came through the academy with that made it at any level? Was there anyone that made it kind of at the same level of to as you did?
And better level than me. Blaise Matuidi.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, Blaise
Wow.
Matuidi. Yeah,
Okay, all right,
that's
okay.
amazing.
So same he came through at the same level as you. Wow. Right, okay.
Yeah, we come from the same town, so we are kind of neighbor. And then I'm going to tell you actually a funny story about him. The way he made it is all about luck. What happened to him? We were the first team, and the coach wanted change tactics, so he wanted us to train on the tactic. And he asked the under 17, or no, under 18 coach to play friendly game against us. And the coach said, "Look, I've got an important game this weekend. I can't give you my starting 11, so I'm gonna give you the substitute plus the one who are not in the squad." And Blaise was one of them. He wasn't even a starter with under 18, and he came with us. And it was unbelievable. Every other player went back and stayed. And that was it. That's it. He was
Wow.
unbelievable in training. He started to
Wow.
play. Honestly, the way he was working harder than anybody. Unbelievable player.
But that just, I mean, that just backs up what you've just said. I mean, you just said there about it's all about the amount of work that you put in at a young age. And there, I mean, you said he was, the hardest working out of anyone. And
Unbelievable.
we've seen where he went with his career. That's amazing. That's an amazing story.
Especially he don't have the best abilities. He can't dribble, he can't do anything. But when he's behind you and you hear, you say, "Whoa, he just wants to leave the ball." You know what? He's skinny, but his bones, oh my God, when they go into your flesh, unbelievable guy as well.
Robert, you wanted to go in there on something?
Kind of linked to that, you say Blaze obviously has went on to have a really good career, but was there anyone when you were still at Troy that was a big mentor in terms of coaches or teammates to you at that time?
Sorry, 2 years at a time. Yeah, he's a coach. He went and we didn't really speak, but he told me a few things. It's called Alain Perrin. He used to be a coach for Portsmouth at some point. Portsmouth, yeah. He used to be a sports teacher. So he
Okay.
knew how to speak with the young kid. So he was with the first team, the team who he brought Troy to Europe and everything. And he came and tried to speak to the player from the academy at some point. And honestly, everything opened when he came and had to speak that day. Everybody started to listen, and it changed. Every players who were there that day, everybody started to work harder and harder. I remember people started to sneaking out, they stay still stay in a football the pitch area, and started to run without people see them, just to say, "I'm working harder than you." And it was the competition who worked the hardest without being seen. It was crazy. There's a player actually never made it. He never made it. It's called Arnaud Garnier. You might know him. His name is Sean Garnier. He was the world champion of skill. I don't even know how you call them. People who keep up
All right, okay,
skill and stuff. He was the world champion. He was in Iron. What's it called? Red Bull team, and he was the world. He's a world champion. He was a world champion. Unbelievable. Sean Garnier, can Google him.
that's crazy. See, from your early career and even going forward, do you remember what you did with your first top in terms of like for France under 21? What did you do with your top? Did you keep it or swap it?
I kept it.
Kept it? You still got it? Or...
Yeah, probably. Yeah, he's in France.
In France.
I didn't keep mini short, to be honest. What happened is when I was playing in Premier League in England, I had so many shirts, and my brother sold them without
Oh,
telling
your
me.
brother sold them.
Yeah, without telling me. He didn't even
Oh,
see them.
that's brutal.
He didn't see them. Sorry, because I'll be lying. He gave it to his friends.
Well, that's even worse. Well, you could at least spend money and give it to you.
Make a few quid.
Yeah, he could have had big names as well.
What was the best one you had?
At Shevchenko, at Balak.
Wow.
Yeah, I think those two at Didier Drogba. Yeah, I think those three was the best.
Drogba, I mean, that must have been class playing against Drogba. I mean, you said there that you would have played for Ivory Coast if you could, if you did. That must have been amazing. I mean, you moved to the Premier League, and you went right in at Sheffield United. Was it a culture shock? Was there a jump in quality? On the pitch, was it a lot more difficult? What was it like moving to the Premier League?
First of all, when I moved, I wasn't speaking English, so that was already a big culture shock. Also, I remember the first day of the training session. I'm not known for somebody who can just run bam bam. I can't do that. So the first day was a big test, and I've done 11, and everybody was doing 16, 17. It's so weird because while we are texting, we are talking now. Since Nick Montgomery, who just texted me, the Hibernian coach, he
Yep.
just texted me, and I
Yeah,
used to be with.
he was at Sheffield United with you.
He just texted me there, invited me to watch Ibs. I went to a game one day. I just put stuff on and I went to watch a game. It was very difficult. I remember then the training was so hard. Then they went in pre-season and he took everybody except me. Neil Warnock took every single player as well, team of 27, I think, and he left me in Sheffield. And they hired two fitness coach, and I had one in the morning, one in the evening, battle me like I've never been battled before. That was really, really hard.
See, out of interest, was that down to like maybe before leaving home at such a young age, had you not had a chance to kind of learn like nutrition and stuff like that in terms of cooking or stuff like that, or was it
Well,
diet, kind of diet?
what happened when I was in academy in France, like I said, everything was made for you to be at the
Yeah.
best condition. So what you eat and everything. So when I took my flat at 18, I think, or 17, 18, I just ate what I used to be eating for so many years. So I knew what to eat. And obviously, even though I was a kid. I was a kid, 18 years old, 17 and a half, 18 years old, earning, having his own flat, earning some good money, but don't know how to spend it. You don't know what to buy. You're not used to be on your own, the bills, all those things, you're not used to it. So you eat what you can, basically. Eat what you can. And the main things that we know how to do is to make is pasta. So it'd be pasta or rice, pasta, rice. That's all we'll be eating all the time.
What was it like playing under Neil Warnock? Because he's been like quoted a good few times as like he would have liked to have managed in Scotland at some point. And we've obviously seen plenty of documentaries and different things on him, but you were quite a fan of him, I think.
Look, I didn't know Neil before I came in UK. And the first impression of the guy is frank. He say what he's got on his mind. He's the one of the best human being I ever met. He will tell you if you're right, he's wrong, or you're wrong. He will tell you straight away, and he never hold grudge against you. He never hold grudge. There's games where you see him shouting and you see videos of him going crazy and everything. As soon as the game is finished, he's the best man. You wouldn't even think that this guy 5 minutes ago he was shouting like crazy. He will be the nicest guy you will ever see. It's unbelievable the way he can switch. And I remember I used to send he used to call me and come invite me to his house to have dinner with his family and stuff. But like he said, even himself, it's not the best tactician. It's not the best tactician. But the way he's talking to you before a game, you get pumped up and you're just like, let's go on the pitch. And that's sometimes what you need, you know? You don't, it's not always the best technical or player who make it, but the one who's got the best heart. And I think the Scottish team has got already a huge heart. And if you've got somebody like this, sky's the limit.
And I suppose, Christian, we'll go on to different clubs you've been at later on, but every manager you play under will have a different approaches. So Neil Warnock, you say, I read in a previous interview, he was like pizzas for everyone on the bus after a defeat and was very friendly and great fun. But the next manager you play under won't be the same. So I suppose it's just acclimatizing and taking each manager for how they are.
Look, in France, when you lose a game away, you better not have a smile on your face on the bus. You better not have a smile on your face. The coach better not hear you on the bus or even on the plane. He better not hear your voice, especially if you're 18 or 17. And if you've got the thing to say hi or no or stop, and even the captain hear you, you know, then the week after you'll be on the bench or you'll be on the stand. But you need to be careful. When I was in UK, when I first in Sheffield, before the game, everybody's laughing. As soon as you go into the dressing room, everybody's a total different person. Everybody's like in a mode where I'm on my zone. Don't come and joke with me. As soon as the game is finished, you win or you lost. That's when I learned. And once the game is done, it's done. There's no point coming. Think about the game too much. You need to move on. I remember in France, we used to play the game before the game, and we used to play the game after the game. So you go home, you think about the game, and again and again, and then Monday you think about the game, and then whole week basically until the next game. What they try to do here, I feel like they try to make you forget about what just happened, and now is the beginning of football again. Does it make sense? You know
Absolutely,
what I
yeah.
mean? And I think that's a better approach.
It lets it get out of your system. Like in terms of Neil Warnock, you'll speak to you at the time, say, yeah, maybe it's not acceptable, but half an hour later, you can all be back and focus on the next game rather than constantly. I like that.
Exactly, because there's nothing you can do anyway. The game is finished.
Yeah, you can't change the
So,
outcome.
exactly. So let's move on and be ready for the next week because you play against another opponent, a different one who will have a different approach. So you need to be ready for that and not think about the mistakes you've made because you will make different mistake next week. That's for sure.
Christian, sorry, John. Just to ask, I mean, we're going to be going on to the real football soon, you know, the Scottish football. But just on that season, you were at Sheffield United. Is there a particular game or a particular goal or a particular memory that really stands out for you? Is something, you know, like a really memorable moment for you? Is there anything particular?
I know when you play, there's three moments I'll never forget. So the first one is when the coach told me that I would be in the squad for the first game of the season, and I went in the tunnel and I've seen all those players and I used to see on TV in the tunnel, and I'm like, wow, I'm a player now. Now I'm in the big league. It's no joke. When the coach told me to go a warm up, I told him no, I'm not going. I was so scared to come in. Then the next game, I think we played Tottenham or something. And I one of the best players, and I was so fan of him. I was fan of his team. So Ajax, there were Edgar Davids. He was playing for them at the time. And I remember we went shoulder to shoulder and he moved. And I was happiest, one of the happiest moments of my career. I also know that I was at some point I was in a corner where I forgot the number of stadiums, Walter Lane or something. I don't know the name of the stadium at the time. I was pressing, then I managed to recover the ball. I done some skills, and I passed the ball, and I missed it, and I went sick. I've been sick like everywhere on the pitch, on the corner, or on the corner of the pitch. Started to be sick just because of the pressures, adrenaline, and everything. And then obviously the game against Arsenal. That the three things, and I'll never forget.
Yeah, the goal against Arsenal you still see doing the rounds on social media and the internet quite often. So,
Yeah, I can't forget. Even if I wanted to, I wouldn't be able to.
what was that?
Even if I wanted to forget about this goal, I wouldn't be able to. Is it? He come on TV at least once a year,
And
or
then
on social media or something.
the result's even more remarkable because everyone loves when an outfield player has to go in goal, and Phil Jagielka had to go in goal for the last 30 minutes, didn't he, in that match?
Oh yeah. It was last 10 or 15 minutes. It was on this game was unforgettable for us. I think any player who played the game were crazy, and the fact, like you said, then Jags had to go in the goal. It was even crazier and win the game.
And you obviously you absolutely bullied Kolo Touré for the goal. You ragdolled him, and not easy to do.
You know what? That's the only time in the game where I'm the 2 times I bullied him twice in the game, but other than that, the guy is a machine. He's so strong. You don't even like I tried to speak to him. I'm from Ivory Coast, so I tried to speak to him. The guy ignored me the whole game. Not even tried to talk to me. I said, "Please try to talk to me." He ignored me. I was a big kid. I was excited to be on the pitch. I tried to talk to him. Just don't talk to me. Just play the game. And at the end of the game, he came and he ran towards me and gave me a shot. Loved it.
Aye, so just during the game he was completely focused, but then after it he was kind enough to give you his jersey. That's good. I like that.
There's player like that. I saw there's another player that I've seen. It's Patrice Evra. Do you know, you see him on social media being a clown and everything? That's not a joke. That's not a show. That's him. He's like this. That's really him. It's not because he's on Facebook or everything. That's Patrice Evra. But as soon as the guy go into the dressing room, he's a cyborg. He don't speak, he don't joke, he don't have time for this. He's going boom. As soon as the game is finished, back to be a clown. Nicest guy ever.
He seems like a good guy. Is he the best character you've played with then, would you say, in your career?
100%. He's a man leader. He know how to lead his players. He was a captain at the time. Unbelievable. It's weird because I wouldn't say fear, but everybody was respecting me so much, more than probably the coach.
Right, Josh, you were saying let's move on to the good stuff, the Scottish stuff. That's what you're saying, isn't it? So you're actually featured
The real football.
for a year, and then there was reported interest from Crystal Palace. Is that right? Was there other clubs interested at that point outside of Scotland, like apart from Crystal Palace?
When I moved in Scotland,
Yeah.
I had a club in France, but Crystal Palace was the main one. Yeah.
Who was interested from France at the time?
I forgot the name. It was in south of France. I forgot the name. But that's yeah. But it was one of two clubs in France and Crystal Palace. But Crystal Palace is the only club who actually made the move.
Okay. So how did the move to Hearts then come about? What happened? How did you hear about it? And what did you think when you were first told that Hearts were interested?
It was very quick. So I was playing for Sheffield, as you know, and what happened when Neil Warnock left? You had the new coach. I forgot his name. Brian Robson, I think, yeah.
Very
So
okay, yeah.
something like that. Yeah, came in. I don't know why. From the first day, he didn't like me. He didn't want me in his team. Started to make things up. Started to lie, saying I slapped Brian Kidd, things like that. I'm like, why would I speak to him? Why would I slap him? So he started to put me with the reserve team, and then he asked me to come back with the first team, and then send me back and bring me back. And it was very confusing, and like I said, I couldn't really speak English, so it was quite difficult. And Neil Warnock loved me, and he called me and said, "Christian, look, come to my house." So I went to his house. We had dinner, and he said, "I'm gonna go to Crystal Palace in January, and if eventually I go, I would like you to come with me. But you need first team games. So go to Sheffield, go to Hearts, and then And then from there, in January, I come when I signed for Crystal Palace, I come and I'll get you. And then I said, okay. He said, obviously they don't have the same money, so you need to put your salary down. It doesn't matter, I'm not going for so long, so no problem. Well, how did I let
Okay.
me go?
So at the time you moved to Hearts, you thought that you wouldn't be there long and then be back down in England with Crystal Palace. That's what you thought happened. That's interesting. So what was it like being at Hearts under during the Romanov era? Because we all know off the field how crazy he was and the things that we've seen, it seemed to be like players were getting signed constantly. But what was it like?
Was a shambles. It was a shambles. When you're there, you don't really feel it. It's when you're outside and you look and you're like, wow. The guy will tell you who to play, when to play, which player starts, who's on the bench, when he doesn't know much about football. And you have to accept it.
Yeah, because there was always rumors in the media that he was trying to influence the team. So that actually was happening. He was in there trying to pick certain players, tell the manager who to pick.
Look, we. If you tell me now, if you ask me who was the real coach, I wouldn't even tell you who was the coach. I don't know. I don't know. The only person we were talking to was Stephen Frail, and that's it. The rest, don't know.
Who was the manager when you came in at Hearts, Christian? Because obviously you were there when Csaba László was the manager.
Yeah, someone else who came after.
Yeah, but he was after, wasn't he? So who was the manager when you first came in, went into Hearts?
Look, I don't know. I'm being
I was
serious,
looking
I
this
don't
up.
know.
Wow.
I was looking this up earlier. Was it a guy called Berocher, who I can't even remember. Like they had that many managers at that point, but it was a, I think a Ukrainian guy called Berocher, who I cannot remember.
That name tell me something here, maybe. It was maybe what there were two guys I remember, one with a gray hair and one a tall guy with a dark hair. And that's it. And they couldn't speak English. So one barely and one not at all. So I don't know. I'm being serious. Probably other player would know, but I don't know.
It's basically Stephen Frail was doing all the talking, all the coaching, really, and those guys are
Yeah.
just the face,
Basically,
they were
yes.
just there.
Yeah.
Maybe I thought they okay. Because you know, I mean, at Hearts, when you came in, if you look at the squad that was there, Christophe Bera, the late Marius Lucas, Leon Gonçalves, the left back, Robbie Nielsen was there,
Yeah.
Lee Wallace was coming through, Michael Stewart was there. So lots of kind of big personalities, good players.
What did you think about the quality when you came into Hearts, Christian?
To be honest, I was surprised. I was really surprised. It wasn't the same in England. I'm not gonna lie, it wasn't the same. But the players individually, whew, in training, it was high quality. High quality. Yeah. You see, when you play a player with Larry Kingston, honestly, unbelievable player. But he play only when he wants. But actually, he actually play only when he wants. If he say today I'm gonna run the show, you know, then today he's going to run the show.
You often hear of that, Christian, of players doing really well in training, but failing to replicate on a match day. There's a lot of nowadays, there's a lot more sports psychology for players, but did you always cope with that pressure? Like, Tynecastle is quite an intimidating ground, expectant fan base, like replicating what he was doing on a Monday to
Is
Friday in the training ground on a Saturday.
no, obviously there's always in every clubs and every team there's training player. We call them training player. In training you see them and they're just like, wow, you see how you still here? Should be playing for Real Madrid or something. And as soon as they step on the pitch, it's like they froze. And that's it. They disappear. And now you ask like, how are you professional? How did you make it? But yeah, Tynecastle is a very, very, very intimidating place. Like everybody loves to play there. When you're on top, it's the best place in the world. But when you're running, when you get beat, There's no place where you can hide. You can't hide there. It's so hard, and you feel everybody on top of you watching you, and you get these pressures coming in, and every a single touch is become like so hard. I see. Tank Assault. I rather it's harder to play Tank Assault than play a Hybrox for me or Celtic Park. 100%. And I'm sure if you ask any Rangers players and Celtic players, they will tell you the best places. Tank Assault.
Yeah, people often say that the most difficult place to play away is Tynecastle.
Yeah.
Where did you feel was the most difficult away game?
Kilmarnock.
Kelly? Wow.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I hated them. I hated them. It's not that I hated the squad. I hate the team. It's like you play against cyborgs. Those guys, like, they never get tired. They always run. They just bully you. They were not like the best football player, but when they come at you, you know that there's a man who's ne standing next to you. They were just machine. Never get tired. It was so hard to play against them.
We weren't expecting that. When we were speaking to Hearts fans about you coming on, some of their favourite memories obviously your goal in the Scottish Cup. Gary Glenn scored and you scored.
Yeah.
The 2-0 after the Hibs fans were giving you plenty of abuse, and then you went right over to them and celebrated.
Yeah.
That must be a great feeling.
Oh, there's nothing better than this, honestly. Especially the Ibs fan. I remember one day I had an interview and I said when I play against Ibs, I love it because they give me stick, and all I'm thinking about more than any other game is to score goals. And I just want to be in a 6-yard ball for the ball to come there, and I know I will score. And all my things in my head is I don't care about what I have to do for the game during the game, but I just need to be in the box. And that was my mentality against them. And probably that should have been against any teams, but
Yeah.
against them because they were giving me so much abuse. And I said that in an interview. And I remember I was playing for, I don't know who I was. I think I was playing for Raish Rovers or Dumbarton. And the full game, they didn't give me any stick. They didn't say anything. They didn't give me any abuse. And I was so frustrated. And I tried to wind them up and everything. And they didn't give me nothing. And then I scored. And I still went to them and said it. And they were so mad. They were so mad at me. That's one of my truly best memories in football.
That the best memory, would you say? Yeah,
One of the best, yeah.
it's interesting because as a fan, I always think I kind of we go to football. I'm not one for giving abuse to the opposition because I always think that if you do it, you're going to like there's some players that will thrive off it, like you're saying there. You thrived off getting abuse from the opposition fans that made you want to do better. Whereas I suppose other players would maybe crumble under that type of pressure.
No, me, I love it. I love it. That's honestly, people made me a hard time in Scotland was a Hibs fan. But like even on the street outside of football and everything, then my only way for me to repay was to score, or to give them stick was to score. So for them it was like a different motivation.
Yeah, and you liked going to Easter Road as well because one of your first goals for Hearts as well was an equaliser at Hibs, wasn't
Yeah, my first goal was Easter Road. Not a good start.
That's one way to win over the fans quickly, is it?
Sorry?
That's one way to win over the fans when you score in your first game. And I
I
thought I
know.
was going to follow up and ask. You say you always wanted to be in and around the box. Was there any teammate at Hearts that you just had a really good connection with that would always find you with passes for goals or chances?
Was the opposite. Velichka.
Oh, Andreas
Velichka.
Velichka, yeah.
Andrzej Wajda, he will always be in the 18-yard box or 6-yard box, and I don't know how I always managed to find him, always, and he scored so many goals coming for me, and I love playing with the guy. He was so smart, but you just needed to learn how to play with him, and I've been lucky that I trained so much and I knew every of his movements, everyone's seeing. So every time I had the ball, I could find him without even knowing them, without even seeing him there. I knew he would be there. And I think I give him so many assists, and he get to move after for to Rangers.
Yeah, and then later on, end up at Aberdeen, remember?
Did
A
he? I
swap
don't even
deal.
know.
I like it, yeah.
Probably, I don't know, but what I know is he didn't score as many goals as he scored for Hearts with many teams, and he play when he was playing for Rangers.
They should have signed you as well then.
You know what? That's the way it worked, but you know what? They were not smart at the time.
Well, actually, on that note then, who was your best partner strike-wise in football? Would it have been him or would it have been someone else?
No, it was him. It
Was
was
him.
him. Yeah.
Was it always your preference to play in a front two? Has it always been your preference to play in a front two, or do you like playing alone as a lone striker?
The thing is, before I came to Scotland, I wasn't really a striker. I was a striker without being a striker. I was more a 9.5. So I was a player making the runs and everything. And when I came in Scotland, they put me at target man, something that I never played before. So I changed everything about my diet. I changed everything about my body to be strong enough, because when you play target man, all you get is elbows in the back of your head, knees in the back of your back, and all of these. So I needed to be stronger.
Because
But
you're not particularly tall, Christian, are you? You're 6'1".
I'm 6'1", yeah. I just
Yes, six
I'm a
one.
very good timing here. Yeah. I'm 6'1". I've
Yeah.
got very good timing. I can jump high and hit the ball, but my thing was I used to be really fast, so it was more the ball in the space and or dribble. But when I was at Hart, they started putting me target man when I had to hold the ball to bring the team together. And you need a lot of energy when you do that.
Did it take quite a lot of time then to adapt to playing that role?
Oh yeah, I needed to learn. It's like learning football again. Like the things that I usually do, then they told me, no, stay there. Hold the ball, bring everybody together for the winger to go and cross the ball. But the thing is, when you do that, and because we were playing quite low, it would be difficult for me to hold the ball in the middle, get everybody's back, and you've got player like Andre Driver, 100 miles per hour, for him to cross, and I won't even have time to be in the box. And then I get the abuse because I'm not time in the box, but you don't see all the effort that I've made to get the team up. And it was frustrating sometimes, and I wasn't scoring enough goals, obviously for the fan, I guess, and for me.
Okay,
But
Alex.
I mean, I'm a big as John knows, I'm a big fan of the theory that a good striker doesn't necessarily have to score a lot of goals. And like you described there, you had strike partners where you would create a lot of the goals for them. I mean, do you feel that you relished playing as a target man, or did you prefer, when you had that ability to be able to run in behind and make those runs?
I prefer when I was doing that because I feel more free. I feel like I could dribble, I could take the ball, dribble it, and do whatever I want. And that's when I was playing for Sheffield. That's what Neil Warnock told me. Do whatever you want. I don't give you any position, just do whatever you want. But when you target man, then you can't mess up. You need to hold the ball for the player to come. And that's more hard because you have to be focused all the time, despite getting kicked, despite being sore. And when I was playing for Hearts, I had the hernia for a year and a half. I played with a year and a half with the hernia. So I had injection every day. Every Saturday before the game, I would get an injection in my bum. And I had medication as well. And that actually destroyed my stomach. But because that we didn't have any other player who could play that position. And that's why I was a player who played the most during my time at Hearts. But when you look at my stats, I didn't score enough goals. And unfortunately, when you're a striker, when you look at the stats, oh, how can you be a striker playing so many games and score only 2 goals? That's not right. So people see the goals, but they don't see the jobs that I have to do to get the team to score goals.
Give you credit though, like you were a scorer of big goals. Like maybe like if you weren't prolific, you had a habit of scoring important goals like throughout your career.
I've been you know what, when you play big games, is players who were actually, it's like get raised, or just feel better. And I'm the kind of guy, I like playing big games. It feel like when I play big games, the pressure disappear. But when I play small games where they expect you to win, I feel so much pressure because, oh, say, oh la la, if you don't score there, we're in trouble. So I would rather do everything for somebody to score, and then okay, we scored, than saying, oh, I don't have any pressure. I can score. It's fine. I don't know if you, if I explain myself right there.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, harder to maybe motivate yourself when you're playing maybe a kind of lower level opposition, whereas against Hearts, there's all the build up. All you're naturally going to be, the body's going to be pumping, the blood's pumping, and you're like just let me on that pitch. I would imagine.
Exactly. Yeah.
It definitely says a lot about your work ethic, Christian, because you're on about getting the team up the pitch and the, like the link up you had with Andreas Velichka. Because when I'm an Aberdeen fan myself, and when I told my friends who are Aberdeen fans I was coming on the pod with you, they all remembered you as terrorizing Aberdeen. So it just shows, even with you saying you might be judged on goals, obviously you had that trait that fans will still remember all this time on.
Like I said, people who know football know that I've done the job. Then I work as hard as I could. I hold the ball. I try to bring the team together. Sometimes I had two, three players. But like I said, people who just spectators, they will just see how many goals he scored. So there's a big difference between
Yeah.
people who know football and actually people who come watch the game.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
usually you hear the voice of people who come watch the game more than the people who know football.
So, in terms of leaving Hearts, how disappointed were you to leave Hearts?
Was more about the way I left Hearts. There's a lot of things that I try to explain to people, or it was very, the way I left, it wasn't right. What Hearts tried, the owner at the time tried to do, wasn't correct. And I hated the club, I would say, for that for a while. And I hated the fact that people didn't believe me or what happened, because what they've done, it wasn't good. It wasn't good at all, and make me look like a liar, and I'm all except a liar.
Yeah, because I think I dread as well, was it Saba Laszlo questioned your fitness as well. He was not happy with you, which was kind of unmerited.
Laszlo wasn't even there when I left. It was Jim Jeffries.
Oh, he's just come in.
It was Jim Jeffries, the coach. What happened is, they offered me a contract with putting my salary a little bit down, and I accepted it, and I signed it. It was a little cut, so I accepted it, and I signed it. And then there's an incident happened with Jan Black, where something happened in the dressing room, and they came to me. And they say, we're gonna divide the salary by two. And I'm like, and I told them, I already made an effort when I came from Sheffield to here. Now, my end of contract, I signed a little bit less. And now you want to divide my salary by two? I'm not going to accept that anyway. I already signed. And I say, anyway, I say, my agent got the contract and I signed the not the spare, the second contract. And they say, no, we didn't send it to him yet. And I'm like, and I phoned my agent and I said, did you have the contract? He said, no. I'm like, oh, sure, I'm in trouble. They want me to sign a lower mon with lower money. He said, well, you shouldn't have done what you've done in the dressing room. And I declined signing. And say, he forced me to sign, he pushed me to sign. I said, I'm not signing it. And then that was it.
It's terrible, and it speaks to how crazy things were at Hearts during that period. And it's sad to hear that, for a time at least, some fans, kind of made you out to be a bit of a villain in that scenario. But I think now with full hindsight, people mob probably recognised that there was a lot more going on at Hearts at that period of time, because you weren't the only player during that period to have had a crazy contract situation.
Oh, so many players. I know that a lot of Lithuanian players were not signed by Hart. They were signed by, I think, Vilnius or something like that. And they were on loan, so their salary was crazy. They were, I feel so, but some of their salary was 1,000 a month or something like that, or 2,000 a month. And when you got players earning 12, 13, 14,000 a week. And you see when you were doing stuff and you say, oh, let's go do this, let's go do that, and say, no, we can't, because they couldn't afford it. And that sometimes, you know, when you play football at a certain level, when not everybody's earning quite the same, you make people see you differently despite being your teammates, because you don't earn the same. It's an example of something earning £700 a week and playing every games, and another player earning 8,000 a week and always on the bench. How do you think the guy feel when he see the guy every day in training? No, it's not a good atmosphere.
Is that something that's quite well known within the dressing room, what everyone else is on in terms of wage wise? Would
No.
teammates discuss that, or is that open?
Honestly, I've never seen that except the Hearts. I've never seen
No.
that except
Yeah,
the
no,
Hearts.
that's why I
No.
was surprised when you were saying that.
Never seen that except, well, a Heart and when I was playing in Thailand.
Very
A
well.
Heart and when I was playing in Thailand. In Thailand, it was more visible. Like, it was crazy. But a Heart, because I spoke, like, one of my, sorry, one of my best, my best mate in Heart, there are two guys, Lee Wallace and Marius. And I was speaking with Marius all the time. And he told me how much the other player was getting paid. He was getting paid the same salary until the second season.
Okay. So, I mean, Josh is an expert on finances. He'll tell you what wage every Darvel player is on.
Oh, I can tell you. I can tell you, and let me tell you that they're on a lot more than any Lithuanians that Romanov signed.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
We know obviously you spent a spell in Cyprus and Thailand, but we'll move back to when you came back to Scotland and came to Dundee. Possibly your most successful season in professional football, would you say?
In Dundee?
With Dundee, yeah, in 2014.
I don't know if it's my most yeah, actually, yeah, I loved it. I loved it. You had a hard time at Dundee, but I loved it. Really loved it.
Because obviously you won the championship with Young there in an exciting three-team race for the title.
Three teams. I remember Hearst and Hamilton. Who was the third one?
Dundee, Hamilton, and maybe was it Falkirk?
Oh yeah, but not for long. Not for long. But yeah, it was that kind of thing you want, you know. It's like a movie scenario when you fight until the last second. It was honestly, that's one of the places where I was really good to have left.
Yeah, you were quite gutted to have left Dundee at the end of the season. Who was the manager of Dundee that season, John?
John Brown, then Paul Hartley. Paul
So
Hartley,
it
then.
was Paul
So it
Hartley.
was.
Paul Hartley. Yeah.
How was Paul Hartley to play under as a manager? Because you must have. Did you play with him at Hearts?
No, I didn't play with him at Heart in the year I
Cross,
came.
no crossover.
It's difficult for me to come in and talk about nice about Paul after what he's done to me. He's probably a good guy. He's probably, but I'm tired of you know what? There's something about footballer or footballer are fake. And they are fake because the world around them is fake. The people around them are fake. So I'm going to give you an example. When you watch a game, let's say Celtic played against Bokol Fiston or something, they won 5-0. And you ask one of the players, how was the game? And they will say, it was a good game. I think they came right at us. And it was a good team. I think if they worked harder, they could go higher. Listen. Now you ask the real question. How was them? They were rubbish. They've got nothing to do here. It was a waste of time. It was 5-0, and we went home. Is that the real answer? I'm not saying you're a bus captain. I'm not what I'm saying. I'm
Yeah.
saying what that's the real answer. That's being real. But people always make things fake. So you ask me about Paul Hartley, how he is. As a human being, he's probably a good person. As a coach and a man management, I think he was horrible.
Yeah, you didn't think he I mean he would yeah, he would like rank pretty low in terms of the managers that you've played under.
Let's say I've known worse, but he wasn't a man of his world. That's more like this.
Okay, that's
He
fair
wasn't a
enough.
man of his world.
Do you remember much about the title race going into the end of the season? Because when I was speaking to a Dundee fan, he was telling me he could reel it off by memory. Third last game, got beat by Morton, who'd already were getting relegated. I think you'd missed a
Yeah.
sitter. And at that point,
No.
no,
Did I?
that's what he says.
No. I gave a sitter for somebody and he missed
Oh,
it.
right, okay,
Yeah,
that's
because
good.
I was on the bench that day.
But he then went on to say how the last couple of games you were phenomenal, as you clinched the title.
But that's what I mean is I had the small out because the way we are playing at Dundee, he started to put me again as a target man when I was on my own and I was just fighting for everything. And I say, that's not the way you're going to get the best out of me. And he put me on the bench. And I never said anything. And then he put me against Morton the last 20 minutes. And he realized, oh, Christian can run. And I was quite fast and I was doing stuff and everything. And he came to me and said, look. And I think when we lost against Morton, we became second. We passed second. And everybody started to panic in the dressing room, I remember. And I said, guys, we're going to win the league. You need to chill. And they said, oh, we're second now. Hamilton not going to make a mistake. I said, guys, you need to chill. We're going to win the league. I'm telling you that right now. We're going to win the league. And the coach to me said, Christian, if you win the league, I'll give you another year contract. And I'm like, okay, put me in the team. And I started against Alloa. And I think I scored and I gave an assist and I provoked a penalty. And then we went first. And because Hamilton drew that day. And then the last game of the season, I remember the warm up and everybody normally talk in the warm up and everything. And nobody was talking. Everybody was so like, guys, you need to relax. If we start like this, it's not going to be good. Relax, be the same than you always are, like in training, in game. If you start to be scared, we're going to be in trouble. And I remember Tom Ritchie was the fitness coach shouted at me and said, leave them. They are so focused. I said, they don't need to be focused. It's the same games and we played last week as the week before. They just need to be relaxed. We are the better team here. We need to be relaxed. If we play with fear, we're going to be in trouble. It's going to be a full house today. We need to relax. And then went to the game and I tried to lead by example and everybody started to do the same. Everybody led it by example and we won the game even though it was hard. And the fan was amazing that day. We're amazing that day. And we won.
Then obviously last year of the season you scored against Dumbarton. What were the celebrations like after that? Do you remember them?
What happened is the police came in the dressing room before the game and told us and if we score we can't celebrate with the fans. Because obviously they're scared and they won't be able to control the fans. But when you play football, you play for the fans, you know, you play for yourself and you play for the fans, you know, the small joys that you can bring into some of the fans' life is priceless. And when I score, my first way was I want to run to them. I can't, so I just run towards the bench to celebrate with everybody.
Good celebrations afterwards, though, like after the game.
After the game, well, we're done. So we had the we walk on the pitch, and then we went. I think a nightclub. I think so, or maybe I went home. I don't know. I think we went to a nightclub. That
Fat
maybe I went
Sam's.
home. Fat Sam's. Fat Sam's in Dundee.
I don't. I look. I don't even know. I don't. I was following everybody. I was following everybody, but it was crazy. It was crazy.
Brilliant.
Good
It was
characters in
crazy.
that dressing room as well. Declan Gallagher, Martin Boyle. Peter McDonald, who I heard about the character in the game.
You know what is one of the only dressing room man I see that everybody get along with everybody. Usually you see some corner, players there and there and there. It's the only dressing room. Maybe they were there, they had, but I didn't see from my point of view. Everybody was talking to everybody. Everybody was laughing with everybody. And you had one leader in a team, and the rest was following him without any discussion. That was
Yeah.
nice.
And is that something you always see? I'm thinking Christian, because you've played, you've played at just about every level there is in football. Is that always the same? Do you always see kind of cliques in dressing rooms?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And that's when you need a good manager. When you've got a good manager who know how to talk to people and know to talk to players, it will minimize this kind of incident. Because when you've got a player who don't play and always on the side, it's like a bad apple in the dressing room and start to contaminate other players. And then there's two and then three, and then you see small groups, and that start to talk behind people's back. But when you've got a good manager, we'll try to put everybody together, try to give some game time to everybody, even if you don't give them as much time as they want, but you talk to them, you show them that they're as much as important than the one who's scoring every goals. They just, as soon as you give them even 1 minute, they will appreciate it so much. And that's something I learned as a player, and I try to do it as a coach.
Has there ever been a club you've moved to that you have struggled to adapt to the dressing room culture?
In Thailand, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, big time. In Thailand, big time. The Hearts, they were a group in the dressing room. You could see the foreigner on one side, you could see the Lichen on the other side, and you could see. We used to call, well, you see the Scottish one side, you would see the British, the Lichenian, and we used to call us the rest of the world on one side. Honestly, you will go in the dressing room. You would just boom, you could see straight away, boom, boom, boom. Three groups. And
What about
that's
your
not
time?
what.
Sorry.
Sorry.
What about your time at Wraith? Do you enjoy your time at Wraith? Again, big goals, Josh. You enjoy this one? Big goal like at Ibrox or Wraith Rovers.
Yeah. No, I love my time ahead.
I think I was at that game, actually,
Yeah.
Christian. I think I might have been one of the people abusing you in the stands.
You know what? When you play, you don't really see the faces of the person. If you do, you never sleep. But yeah, I love. I think a race was the place where I met the most genuine people in the football. Everybody, every single from the coach, the staff, to the people who work in the shadows. Everybody was so nice and yeah, I love playing there.
And again, a big goal. Obviously, Scottish Cup, good time to get you on with the Scottish Cup being just a weekend by. And another goal against Hibs as well at Wraith Rovers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? The goal I scored against Ibs, it was very, very weird because if I remember very well, I think I scored the last minute goal. It was a last minute header. And I was rubbish the full game. I was literally rubbish the full game, wasn't hand, getting nothing. And I keep looking at the coach, thinking, when's going to take me off the pitch? When's going to take me off the pitch? And he kept me and kept me. And then last minute corner, boom, I scored a goal. And we're so happy. And I went to see him. And I said, why you didn't take me off the pitch? He said, because it's again, Ibs, I know you are going to score. That's literally what he told me. Look what happened. And then when I played for Dumbarton, the same coach was assistant manager at Ibs.
That Grant Murray, no?
Yeah, no, he was assistant manager at Ibs. And he told the players, never leave him out of your sight because he will score. And boom, I scored. And he came to me and said, I told them. He said, I told them.
Aye, a 3-2-1, I think, at Dumbarton. I know there's like plenty of other kind of clubs you played for in the kind of seniors, but Josh and me are fans of the West of Scotland League. So what was it like when you moved into the West of Scotland, playing with kind of good few clubs there? Troon in particular that stands out because you played with Ryan Stevenson there, and a guy we've had on the podcast before, Robert Love, good character.
Yeah, good guy.
Did you enjoy your time at Troon?
I really do enjoy my time at Chun. To be honest, Chun saved me. And I'm not even like going hard enough on the word save. I had a really, really tough time at the time. Really, really tough time at the time. And the coach contacted me and asked me to come to play for his team. And I've never thanked him enough for that. He believed what I told him because there were a lot of extra football was like in my life. And I was in big trouble at the time for no reason. But he saved me. He was there for me. He listened. He believed me. I think he was the second person who believed me after my lawyer. And he made me. And that's why when I play football freely. And I think I scored a lot of goals for them.
That's, I mean, you've been quite open, Christian, about struggles that you've had with your mental health over the years, and I know that you've been quite open and said that football has been a huge part in helping you deal with that and helping you deal with that struggle. I mean, what do you have? I mean, if I could just ask you, can I elaborate on that? I mean, what do you think? How do you think that football helps you deal with your mental health on a day-to-day basis?
Okay, I'm going to tell you a story when I was young. It's a quick story. It's not even a story. So when I was 11, my parents broke up. It was a really, really heartbreak. I had to go in front of the judge, and the judge put me in a foster house. So I went in the foster home with my little brother. And from the first day I arrived there, the man in the house hit me. And he battered me. And I was meant to stay there from Monday to Saturday, Monday to Friday. And on the first day, when he beat me, I phoned my mom. My mom came to pick me up. But she was not allowed. So I've been sent back there. And my dad knew I was good at football. So he sent me to pre-academy where you go there from. At the test, you had to go through a test to go to this pre-academy. To just be able to go through the try, you needed to do 50 keep up with the left, 50 keep up with the right, 50 alternate, and 50 with head at the age of 11, 12. And I so wanted to get out of this place, and I've done it the first time. Me and my brother have done it. And then we passed the trial, and we were good, both of us were good, and they signed us. And from there, we had to stay in the pre-academy from Monday to Friday. So if football was not there, I would have stayed in this house where I've been beaten Monday to Friday and come back over the weekend. And because of football, I managed to be in the football academy from Monday to Friday. So if there were not football, it would have been very, very tough life for me.
Shows you the power of football.
Terrific.
It's hard hitting, but these stories people need to share. I think talk about things. I think we all know that.
Yeah. I think everybody suffer at some point. Everybody's got their story. That's mine. If I didn't have football, I know then I'll be in trouble. Football give me the best joy in my life, but also the worst pain in my life. People ask me, do I regret being a professional? I say yes and no. Professional give me so much joy. Football give me a opportunity to travel to places where I would have never seen. I met people that I've never seen because of football. I can speak English now. In same time, football highlight my weakness. Some things, and I never try to. I always what I was leading at some point is when somebody hurts you or says something to hurt you, never shows them you'll be hurt. And in that case, they don't know that they hurt you, and they can't be satisfied of you being hurt. But living this way, you actually taking everything on board. So somebody says something really hurtful, but you pretend and you're fine. And everything is inside you all the time, all the time, all the time. And at some point, everything will come in, even though it's just word, because the word come into you here. So it come inside you, need to come out one way or another. And some people will do the wrong thing, like I try to do. Some people will try to speak. And I think that the way to do is to speak to people, get this out. But when you hold it, hold it, hold it, it's going to explode.
Yeah,
And that's what
definitely.
happened to me.
I think as well in terms of like probably the kind of generation that you grew up in football as well would have been kind of quite tough going in terms of dressing rooms and different things like that, where probably as a guy you wouldn't have that outlet to be able to speak to someone. You'd just be told to get on with things if you did. Fortunately, whereas the good thing is now people are being more open and being more free with being able to talk. So the more that that happens, it becomes a regular occurrence, and everyone will hopefully feel that they can talk about their mental health and get support. Like we've always been kind of, you know, advocates, any kind of mental health discussions and anything at all. So, yeah,
The thing
anyone
is,
who's struggling at all, we always say contact us as well.
the thing in football, when because there's so much money. Well, for some teams, and there's so many players. It's easy at the time while I was playing. It was easy for a coach to put you on the side. I'm not feeling good. My head is not well. I've got this problem. This problem. Okay, put on side. Boom. There's another player going to replace you. They're not gonna try to follow how you are and everything. We don't have time for this. Time is money. We need to put another player. And this player, if this player is doing well. One, you lose your place, you might lose your contract, and your depression gets worse and worse. So what you do, you don't speak because you're scared to lose everything. So you keep it to yourself. Now it's different. They encourage you to speak. Say, this not because you spoke and I'm not gonna give you an extension on your contract. It's not because you feel bad and I'm not going to I'm gonna put you on the side. And that's sometimes what players need to hear. To be able to speak because they're scared to lose their place, they're scared to lose their contract because that's their livelihood. And if you tell them, then tell me what's happening, and don't worry about you not playing. Or that's why people love Mourinho. The players, every player that I spoke to play under Mourinho said, when I had problem at home, he would tell me, go on holiday for 2 weeks, deal with your problem, speak who you ever have to speak. If you need to speak to me, I'm there. But when you come back, you'll be on the pitch playing. And that's when you know the guy's got your back. But when the guy said, you're not well, you know what? You come, I need you. Are you ready to play? Come on, give me everything. And now you feel like, oh, I made a mistake. If I wish I wouldn't have said anything. But it's too late, you already spoke. And now your depression got even worse because the problems and you had extra football. Now you've got a football problem in it. And now you don't know how you're going to live. What if my contract finishes in 6 months? And the coach put me on the side. What I'm gonna do? So people used to keep everything quiet, but now with the help, with the understanding, with the people, the coaches who take the mental health first aid, they try to understand everything. Start to be much, much better. And like you said, people can call your show and try to speak about how they feel. We didn't have this 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, definitely not.
And that's a huge difference.
And presumably, Christian, now, I mean, we know that you're doing a bit of coaching now, yourself. You're in at Pisa, aren't you? Yeah, you're coaching at Pisa. And presumably, you know, given your experience, you'll be able to take that on, you know, with the young guys at Pisa, and you might be able to spot, if you maybe you see another young boy going through this a similar sort of thing that you've been going through.
Look, I'm trying to because like I, you know, when you've been somewhere, you start to recognize when somebody's not well, when something is all, it's not right, when they sing. So I try to speak to the player all the time. I try to keep them together, having fun, laugh with them. I say, look, I'm your coach, but you can take me as a big brother. So player will come and text me and we'll talk. I try to organize something for them in the summer where we could all go to Paris together and come back. Hopefully it can happen. If not, I would still try to organize where we can, I say, because we try to organize to rent a coach. But obviously we need money, so we try to get money. If we can't, I'm gonna try to say, you know what? It's just maybe once of a lifetime, because I'm coaching under 21. Maybe it's the last time you all gonna play together. Maybe some of you will stop playing football. Let's get something together. We all have fun, and just for this time, forget about everything. Just have fun. Forget about football. Forget about the things that happen at home. Let's go have some fun, and then come back and talk about what's wrong. And if it's nothing wrong, let's move on. And I wanted to say in my team, and that's why I was talking about Scottish football earlier, is there's few players. They're 16 years old playing with under 21 and they are flying. And those
Brilliant.
players in France, they could easily play in a professional academy to at some point being professional. But here, it's like they're forgotten. And you lose so many talents because you don't look about those players who play in junior, when sometimes the best player play in junior.
So you say, like I was on another show earlier this week, and they was saying that not enough Scottish top flight teams look towards the Championship and League One and League Two, and you'd say the same as far down as juniors in West of Scotland League. Perhaps some of these young guys are not getting the opportunity that they maybe do deserve. So no wonder their mental health might take a hit when they put so much work in but never get noticed.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm telling you this, there's one player is under 20, two or three players under 21 could easily play at the professional level now. Easily in any team, maybe not starter, but on the bench. And I see some of them being in Premier League. If you give them the opportunity, they will fly in Premier League. They're 16 years old. Amazing player. Amazing player. And I could see them being professional, but they might not never been looked at, and I'm pushing. So I'm trying to organize friendly games against professional teams so they can be seen. I organize the friendly games against Dumbarton first team, the team who played against Rangers 2 days ago. And they play against us under 21, and the coach were surprised how those players still playing there. So they want to see some of the players play go on maybe on try for Dumbarton at some point, because they've never been looked at the way they should. I think every team should look at this league because there's many, many good players.
I completely, and John agrees with me as well, Christian. I completely agree. The West of Scotland League is, I mean, the only that there's some of the clubs at the West in the West of Scotland League. The only reason that they are not in the professional leagues is because of the they can't get into the Lowland League because of the way that the structure is. I mean, the quality in the league is brilliant. I mean, there is a couple of, I mean, we're going to get. Every Meadow is going to get relegated this season, but there are two players at 21, 21 and 20 in our team that I think could play, so much higher. And John, I mean, even at Talbot, there's a couple of boys in there that you pinch from us that could play at a much, much higher level. I mean, like you say, the lower leagues are littered with talent, and it's just about that luck, that wee bit of luck, like Blaise Matuidi.
Exactly. No, it's true. It's football is sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's who you know more than what you know, and a lot of luck, being good at the right time. You can be playing in the park and then somebody walk, oh, he's a good player, and you never know. You on try for Livingston as an example. And then you do well. It's football is about luck, but sometimes you need to push your luck. And if I can get some people to come and watch some of our games, they'd be very surprised.
Christian, what's your
I play
asking
like
points on that? Sorry, Nico.
no, I play at every level, like you said, and I know when there's talent, when the player can play and what cannot play. And I know that some of the players, honestly, are unbelievable. If you give them the chance or just even look at them, many, many clubs will be happy to have them in the team.
What's your own aspirations as a coach? Because obviously you've done a fair bit as a professional, played for some big clubs, played in different countries. What would you like to do going forward as a coach?
I would like to coach the teams that I played for.
Right, okay.
I would like to play for teams that I played for. I would like to succeed with the teams that I played for. And my eventually my ultimate goal will be to be the coach of the Ivorian national team at some point.
Well,
That's my
hey, I mean, you can't do much worse than the guy that's in right now, Christian. Yous have just been
honestly, man.
spanked. Or you've just been spanked.
Listen, don't remind me that, like, oh, it's not spent. We've been everything. It was awful, awful to watch from the first game of the African Nation Cup to the last. It was awful, awful. He didn't take the right player. But is that the problem with Africa? Is I think it's about corruption. Player have to pay to play, and if you don't play, but you don't pay. If you don't pay, you don't play. And I think you've got player like Wilfried Zaha. How can you not have him in the team? Any national team would take him, and you put him on the side, and you find any excuse in the world to say then it's not good for the team. Nah, I'm sorry, it doesn't work like that.
So what's the situation? I'm going off topic here, John, but so what's the situation? You need to wait and see what the Nigeria result is, whether you might be able to get through.
No, Nigeria won already. They won today. They play in the same time.
Or sorry, they've won. So is that Cote d'Ivoire, are they out?
I think at the end we could be best third, but I don't think so. I think to be best third, you should have at least 4 points. We've got only three.
Other groups.
So it's better without anyway. It's better.
Yeah.
We
I
didn't
worked
play
with a
well.
Nigerian at work, and he was gutted when they drew our first game, and then obviously they beat Ivory Coast another day, and he was like, all right, okay, maybe things are a bit better. So,
I don't like your friend.
Anything else, Robbie and Josh, you want to ask before we kind of finish up with some quick fire fun stuff? It's been great stories.
Oh God, I had something in my head there, Robbie. Have you got anything there? I had something in my head to ask it, but it's right in my other ear.
Just one thing, since I'm assuming you still keep a close eye on the Scottish game from like the top flight now, Christian. It's been in the news a lot where Derek Adams coming back to Ross County and saying the game is 100 times better down south with Morecambe, who are in League Two. Do you see much of a difference when you watch Scottish football now compared to when you was maybe at your prime with Hearts or ready for Dundee?
Are you trying to kill me there?
Maybe.
For the benefit of the listeners, Christian has currently got his head in his hands.
Well, first of all, I think the coach, it was a bad move from the coach. A really, really bad move when you just start for a new team and you want to have all the players fighting for you and you come and say that. That's not the best things to say. Second, I think the Scottish, look what's weird, right? So for me, at my time, I think the Scottish football was so much better, so much stronger, so much faster. The player was so committed, and even the football you could see was so much better. That's the way I feel. But the national team wasn't as good. But now, the league is, it's not as good. It's not as good. I went to watch a few games, and I was like, how is this a professional game? And that was Premier League. How is this a professional game? And then the national team is like, wow. Which one do you prefer?
See, on the back of
I
that
know what one
question,
I prefer.
could I ask a question? It was something you brought up earlier about when you were playing your original position, you played but like Freedom and stuff like that, and then you had to move and play as a target man. Do you think sometimes in Scotland players are overcoached? Like, you don't have the creative players that we used to have, the talent. Like, wingers, for example, I think in Scotland are almost non-existent.
I think the football changed the winger. So before, like in the, when I was saying about Andre Driver, you've got Andre Driver, right? When
Great
Andre
player.
Driver got the ball, when Andre Driver had the ball, he will go at the defender. And if he loses nine times, he will still go at it. He will try to go. Now the midfield, the winger will go, stop, and then come back.
Yeah,
pass the ball to the midfield there. There's no more. There's nobody attacking anymore. Nobody dribble. Nobody. It's fad. I don't know. It's like not sweet. There's no taste when you watch the game. There's no like somebody would get the ball and you go on your toes and you're like, oh, no. It's just like, oh. And it's so slow, and it's, I don't know, there's something's missing. I want to see 5-5, 10-10.
Yeah.
I don't want to see 0-0, 1-1. I want to see a lot of goals. I want people attacking. And that's what I mean. Like, you know, when before, you would see players, when I was playing, players would go in Premier League. So we'll go from here, they will go in Premier League in England, or Championship. Now you see people from here keep playing so good, and then they go in League One or League Two.
Mm. Yeah.
But before, they used to go from here, Premiership, or the Premiership player coming here. You don't feel the same. And they take players who play in leagues, in second division or third division, and you expect them to come and rule the team or rule the league. And they were not ruling the league in their league who are not the best. How do you think they're going to do here? You know, it's a player who play in third division. I saw a player playing in third division in France, fourth division in France, and playing Premier League here. And you're like, what's happening here? And I think that the way, you know, you are, if you want a good league, you need to invest money. And I don't think there's enough money at the moment. You know, you could see anything about Romanov, and I don't like the guy, but because he had money, he bought players, player who play at the highest level. And then you've got Ibs, who had also a lot of money, and you had players actually from there who went to Premier League. And then you had Celtic, which was a big team at the time. Rangers, Aberdeen was scary good. So you had all those players, you've got all those teams, five, six teams, when they were playing, you were on your toes. Now you still have good teams, but I don't think they're as good as I used to watch and love watching the old firm. The old firm is not the way it used to be. Now you, as a fan of football, the fan of Celtic, of Rangers, you will enjoy it. But as a fan of football, you need to be real and say it's not the best game I just watched. It wasn't good.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. The quality, even like, you know, even the showcase, if you want to put it, you know, use that way, the quality in that game anymore isn't as good as it was 10 years ago.
No.
It's one of those things that we could probably do a full podcast on and should do at some point. Because especially from the coaching point of view as well, I'd be interested to take a deeper dive into that. But we'll... Conscious of the time, so we'll move on to some kind of quick fire questions that we have for you. We'd like to do. What was your favourite ground that you played at?
My favourite ground?
Yeah.
Parc des Princes, PSG.
Okay. Favourite teammates in your career?
Marie-José Lucas.
Rest in peace.
God bless.
Yeah. Nice.
The best defender that you played against?
Vidic.
Vidic.
Yeah.
That's no bad.
Yes.
You got any, Josh? I know you usually like to throw in a wee question.
Do you have any pre-match rituals or any superstitions?
I used to had to go in the room and pray before games. It was weird. I used to call my agent, and we will always end up by the same thing all the time. And he would come and say, "Good luck," and I will always answer the same thing. There's nothing to do with luck, and then we will hang up. Like we would do that every week, every game. That's it.
Brilliant.
Robbie, anything from you?
I just want to ask, it goes probably back to the very start. dream teammate from any era, and it's only because you mentioned Pele at the start.
Yeah, right. You've got your answer, Spinny. That's
Yeah, no, I
actually.
wondered if
Oh,
he was like a main big idol.
okay.
That's my
One.
biggest regret in football. Never met him.
That you never met Pele. I've got a good
Oh, is
one.
it true then? He played at Trun.
Yeah, he
Yeah.
played it, Trun. Aye, aye.
Or I think Brazil. I think I don't know whether
Yeah.
Brazil were playing Scotland, and he trained at Trun Town.
Trained there. Yeah, I've been told that. But you know what?
Yeah.
When I left Sheffield, I think 6 months after, he went and watched a game there. And
Oh,
I've
did
been
he?
told after.
Oh, well.
Yeah. And I've been told after,
Cool.
and I cried that day.
I've got two more quick fire questions, John.
Yep.
Unless have you got any?
On you
No?
go. I might have one more,
Okay.
but I only go.
Right. Well, so your favourite Côte d'Ivoire player ever?
Wow. Côte d'Ivoire, things would be. It's called Kader Keïta.
All right.
Kader Keïta. He used to play in France for Lyon. Unbelievable. Left wing. Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Okay,
Yeah,
not bad. And my last one, do you enjoy a pie?
a pie.
A pie? Do you
No.
enjoy pies at the football?
No, I don't like
Do you
pies.
never? No, do you never enjoy a pie? We're big fans of pies in this podcast.
No, if I eat the pies because you mean that I didn't all day and I'm starving and I would eat anything. That's the only way for me
Hey,
to
come
eat the pie.
on.
If
So would you ever if you went to a match as a spectator, just as a fan, what would you have as a snack?
I wouldn't have snack there. That's the thing is, I try to avoid because I don't want to have somebody take a picture and come back. Somebody say, "Oh,
Ah,
look at
right,
the
okay.
fatty again. Look at the fatty again."
Oh.
I'm traumatized. I'm traumatized.
Fair
No more
enough.
McDonald's. No more McDonald's.
Right,
No, be seen. I'll take away in my car.
okay. You don't like pies. What would be the food of choice then if you were to pick your favorite three-course meal and your three guests? What would it be? So three guests and your
Three guests.
three-course meal.
So my three guests would be Pele. I would love to speak with Pele. I think Pele three times. But if I had to add to put other two, it would be I would love to speak with Frank Beckenbauer.
Wow.
Frank Beckenbauer. And Pele from Beckenbauer and Bergkamp.
Decent.
Yeah, nice.
Hey, that another unselfish striker.
Yeah, that's why I love the guy. He played for his team. He played for his team. He played for as soon as he's on the pitch, everybody shine around him. I love him. And he's so technical and so clean and so effortless. It was like he's dancing. Love him.
And what would the food of choice be? What would be
Oh, the
on
food.
your...
Like in general, just before a game.
No, like it's like you've got your three guests, what would be your dinner, your top dinner?
The starter would be mozzarella diapers. Mozzarella dippers, sorry.
All right,
Mozzarella
okay.
dippers. I love chicken wings. As a main at the main court would be an African dish called acheke, garba, called garba. So it's cassavas. I don't know if you know, it's cassavas with onion, tomato, some spice
Like a
and
tagine.
I've ate that.
some, yeah, it's better than tagine. Well, to
Better
me,
than tagine.
it's really good. And then as a dessert will be a fondant, a Nutella. Nutella fondant. It's like a cake when you cut, just it's the chocolate just melt like this.
Oof, excellent,
Oh,
excellent.
I love it. I think that would be the meal. Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming on, Christian. Great
My
to meet.
pleasure.
Thanks for your time.
Brilliant. Like we've been
Brilliant. Yeah.
talking for a lot longer. So if you're up for coming back on in the future, we'd be delighted to get you back on.
Donc, send me an invite and I'll be there 100%.
No worries, no worries.
What a guy, Christian. Really loved that. Thanks for coming on
Loved
and
it
chatting
too.
to us.
You're welcome. That's my pleasure.
Fantastic.
Cheers, everyone. Thank you.
All right. So
Happy
thank you.
football.
Happy football.
Happy football.